Hello, welcome to our stream here, the All Hoops Podcast, back for our live show. I'm your host, Steve Inman, joined as always by Chris Brito. Chris, we have a very fun show for our special viewers and guests today. We are going to talk about the NBA trade deadline. The New York Knicks have found a way to get better. A couple of other teams made some interesting moves. We have some winners, some losers. We're going to take fan questions. This is going to be a really good time. But first, as always, how are you?
Hey, Steve, how can you not be disappointed with what the Knicks did today? We got two guys who are going to make us into one of the deepest teams in the NBA as we make a deep playoff run. I don't know. It's hard to not feel so optimistic with the Knicks. I think we still need clarity over Julius Randle's injury, but how can you not be excited about where this team is going?
Yeah, so again, this is a live show, so bring your questions into our comment section here and we'll answer them. We'll start with Andrew here. That's what we're going to get to anyway. Thoughts on Bogdanović to the Knicks. They acquire him. They reacquire Alec Burks. 4-for-2 trade. When we first saw this, right, we're texting each other and we're like, what was this? They traded Quentin Grimes for Alec Burks. We just traded a first-round pick to get rid of Alec Burks. Now we're trading our last young asset to get him back. It didn't make any sense. And then all of a sudden you see it's actually Evan Fournier and Bogdanović in the trade as well. The Knicks trade their, yes, they trade their last young player, but they get two quality rotation players. I thought it was a pretty good deal. I thought they did a really good job of, you know, acquiring guys who can help them if Randle is hurt and guys who can also help if Randle is healthy.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough not to listen. It sucks to let go of a guy like Grimes. I think when you have so much investment in a player like that and then you see him go away in a trade, I think we were both super disappointed. I mean, we had similar reactions when Quickly and RJ left for OG. We didn't know how that was going to work out. So far, it's been a success. But with Grimes, I think he was still a little bit – we were seeing the promise of his potential, but I think he's not as tested as the other two guys that we're getting, and I think that's what we need. We needed a vet. I think just to finish off that point, I would have wanted us to get a point guard instead, but I'm not dissatisfied with who we got.
Yeah, I mean, you look right now and there's a ton of point guards out there who could be available on the buyout market, right? There's, you know, Kyle Lowry. There's now Spencer Dinwiddie comprising a cut from Toronto. Killian Hayes was released by Detroit, even though he played 28 minutes last night over their young guys. We had a whole debate about that before. But granted, there are point guard options out there now who could be a backup who probably would want to join the Knicks. You know, they're going to get some minutes. You know, you're looking for a guy who can play make, and all three of those guys can do that. So I think the Knicks are in decent hands to decide, you know, a week from now, hey, we'd rather have one of these veteran backups, you know, over McBride. They can choose to do that if they want to. They're in a good position. You know, they're a contender. It's fun. I can't remember the last time I've seen a Knicks team this good. Maybe that team with all the old guys that was a 2 seed about 12 years ago. That's really the only other time I've ever seen them be good, when they lost to Indiana in 6 in the second round. So it's a very exciting time for the Knicks. And, you know, when was the last time you saw them win a trade deadline?
I don't even remember when that could have been. I think the only other big trade that I remember on, like, around the trade deadline from years past was like Steve Francis coming to the Knicks way back in the day. But you're right. I mean, how can you not feel good about the Knicks? Like, the Knicks had a lot of buzz getting into the trade deadline as one of the teams that were going to make a lot of moves. And then you sort of hit a home run with two guys with Bogey and Alex Burks, who worked really well with the Knicks the last time he was on the team. The good thing about Bogdan, by the way, is that his contract, which it's expected the Knicks are going to pick up his option. I thought it was more, but even so, he becomes a player that you can still fit in as a chip for a star, another star, because we already have two stars on the team. So this front office has really impressed me, to be honest. Like, I think you know, we both had our concerns with Leon Rose sort of becoming this, the GM of the Knicks, the president of the Knicks without like that experience in the front office. But so far he's done a lot of masterful cost efficient moves. You know, some moves that, you know, maybe the Fournier signing wasn't the best, but
maybe he didn't play for 3 years, but they were able to, you know, use that contract to move on to other guys. Right. For sure.
But, you know, he hit a home run with Brunson. He's gotten great deals with DiVincenzo and Hardenstein. It's hard to not like feel confident with this team.
Yeah, this is a very good position. As our friend John Perez says, you know, this is a good idea. They have acquired more assets. They've acquired more guys who can help them. If they decide a year from now they can move Bogdanovich, they can do that as well. Yeah. They still have all their picks. They still have other teams' picks. If a big star comes available, they can make a move. They can make a big move. They still have all their guys. I think they're probably going to use a I don't know if they have two first-round picks in this draft. You know, one is top 10 protected with Dallas. They have their own first-round pick. With Thibodeau, I'm not confident they're going to wind up having two rotational rookies next year. But at the same time, they have some flexibility to make some moves. So, yeah, very good point there. Just moving on here, taking some other questions. We got one from Devin here. Who do you think made the best move? I'll start here. We love the Knicks move. I think they made a really good move. If you're just joining us here, Chris and I both really like the Bogdanovich and Burks move to the Knicks. Just thinking of other guys, I like what Dallas did today. They get a pretty good center in Gafford, who I think is going to play his best basketball of his career, either as their starting center or as Lively's backup. I'm not sure how that's going to play out. They also wind up getting PJ Washington from Charlotte in a deal where they give up basically their last first-round pick, yeah. Seth Curry, and Grant Williams. And it sounded like not a ton of players on the team loved being around Grant Williams. They just gave him a pretty big contract. And so not only do you get rid of that contract and that headache, but you also get a pretty good young big in PJ Washington, who, like Gafford, I think he's going to play his best basketball as a Dallas Maverick. So they get two front court players who can help a lot. So I think that was probably the best move on the day, in my opinion.
And usually the Mavericks are like a kind of like a tough team to really build because of, in part, how great Luka is, but also, you know, what sort of player do you put around him? So far, it seems like Kyrie has been okay. It's been working out. At least he's probably the highest caliber player of that has played with Luka, but you know those guys that they added are going to stretch the floor for him and provide some toughness that we all know that the Mavericks need that. I think the other thing with PJ is that you know you finally get a big there that can sort of stretch the floor for them, and I think as you move forward, you're going to need guys to throw at Jokic. You know, I the rookie for the Mavericks.
Derek Lively.
Like, you're going to need bodies to throw at Jokic when you see them in the playoffs. So I think the more the merrier, and I think PJ is a great fit.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, if you want one of your questions answered about the trade deadline, your team, just basketball in general, put them in here and we'll answer them. So we'll just move on here. Other trades going on. Pat Bev, he's a Milwaukee Buck now. My thoughts on this is, how does Dame feel? I mean, they've had some beef in the past. A couple of people have been bringing up some of their recent tweets. Not really that far, less than a year ago, they've had some beef. So I think, you know, now Pat Bev is what, Dame's backup in Milwaukee. So I think that's kind of fun. I think they'll get along well, obviously, as teammates. But it's those two have had some kind of rivalry before with Pat as a Clipper and Dame kind of waving him and Paul George goodbye, right, at different times in their career. So I think that's going to be interesting. I'm not sure how much Pat Bev has left in the tank, especially offensively. I'm not really sure he can give you much. It's a very similar situation to like a Miles McBride. You love him on defense. He's a pest. But offensively, I'm not sure what he gives you. So for them to kind of say, we're going to take that for campaign, I wonder what that means about where campaign has been in the last few months. What do you think, Chris?
I love the Pat addition. I think that team needs a little bit of a they need to stop being a turnstile on defense. And I think,
yeah,
listen, Pat isn't going to solve all their problems, but I think at the very least, it spells that that offense when Dame's out, or I like it. Overall, I like it.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's a solid trade. I don't think you should really love it or hate it. It's fine. They traded a rotation player. They got back a rotation player. One was an offensive guy. They trade him for a defensive guy. So it's an interesting deal for both. Now moving on here, we got the Wolves. Our guy Mitch, big Wolves fan. Thoughts on them down the stretch? Well, I think the Western Conference top four is very interesting. I think they're all within a game of each other. That's Minnesota, Denver, Oklahoma City, and the Clippers. They're all kind of tangling up, and they're going to wind up playing each other in the second round. And I think all four of those teams can wind up going to the finals and winning. And so having home field advantage is going to be crucial for all four of those teams. Go ahead.
See, you said the Wolves.
I think any of those four teams right now in the right situation could beat the other ones. I do. I think the Clippers, the way they're playing right now, they look like the best team in basketball. Denver's your defending champs. Oklahoma City, we'll probably get to them in a little bit, how I kind of thought they could have made a bigger move. They look great. And then the Wolves, you know, I would probably put them fourth amongst that group right now, but I think they're still in that top tier if things break right. I think they can go to the NBA Finals. And so, you know, Rudy Gobert is playing great. Towns is playing great. Edwards is a star. McDaniels is a defensive guy who is, you know, really emerged as a stopper. And so having those four guys is huge. And it really is going to come down to them continuing to play great, stay healthy, and getting Mike Conley to somehow stay healthy, because he's dangerously important to them considering his age.
Yeah. Well, didn't they get Monte Morris yesterday, which was a solid ad by them. The thing with the Wolves is, like, I think they're going to be great in the regular season, as they've shown. But my biggest fear is, like, what happens in the playoffs?
That's why they need home field.
When everyone knows what you're doing. And the thing with Rudy's a great defensive player, but once it comes to the playoffs, I think he sort of gets exposed. And that is the only part of this whole equation that doesn't allow me to believe that the Timberwolves can make it all the way. Like, they have one of the best players in the league in Anthony Edwards. You know, Cat is decent. Okay, above decent.
An all-star.
Yeah, he's an all-star. They have some interesting guys, but to me, it's like, for me, I want them to see, like, what it looks like for them in the first round, and then we'll go from there. I think I feel good about the Nuggets. I feel good about the Clippers. OKC, I can't wrap my head around yet, but I think the addition of Gordon Hayward sort of helps that situation. Like, the only thing those guys needed was a veteran experience. And so that was a really solid ad by them today, too.
Okay, Chris, we talked some winners. Let's talk some losers of the NBA trade deadline. For me, the biggest losers are not really the teams that made bad trades. It's the teams that didn't do anything. And those two teams for me are the Bulls and the Lakers. And to me, the Bulls are the biggest loser here. I don't understand why they're just like, we want the 8 seed. We want to be as mediocre and average as possible. They could have got probably a really good package for Alex Caruso. Yeah. DeMar DeRozan's a free agent. They're not trading him for some reason. He's old. They're going to give him a big deal, or he's just going to walk. They wanted to trade LaVine, and he's making too much money. And then the only team that seemed interested were the Pistons, and now he's out for the year. And I don't know if that's a coincidence. You show Piston interest, and then he's out for the year. But that's what happened. And so, Chris, who is the biggest loser in your book?
I think the Bulls. I think you say this all the time about how being in no man's land, which is basically that 10, 11, 12, 9. Well, actually, yeah, that mediocre
8 to 11. You're not good enough to get a top lottery pick. You're not good enough to make the playoffs.
And I think this actually really applies to the Bulls, because the Bulls aren't young. I don't think they're going to be much better next year, even if Lonzo Ball, like, comes back, is in shape, is great again. I feel like the Bulls are holding on to that image of what they had with Lonzo Ball, DeMar DeRozan, and Vucevic for the for that like half a season run, and like I feel like they haven't let go of that. Like, all this to say, I think the Bulls are the biggest losers because they had a chance to trade Drummond also and didn't. Like, what are you doing?
What are you doing is really the message of the 2024 Bulls. What are you doing? And what is the plan here?
And not so far behind. And like the Pistons, who are obviously know who they are, but are, I think, are pretending to be something that they're not.
Right. It's very unclear what the Pistons' plans are. Go ahead.
Although I do love the addition of Quentin Grimes for them. At least you have somebody who could be the starting shooting guard for their foreseeable future, which is good for him.
Right. Well, I mean, we have our guy Devin Curry here asking, you know, how do the Pistons justify their horrible trade? And my question is, which one? Like, they've made so many questionable trades in the last few days, months. It doesn't really make a ton of sense to me. You know, Quentin Grimes is a nice guard, right? But the Pistons have like 9 nice guards. They have Cade Cunningham, they have Jaden Ivey, they have Sasser. You know, now you bring Quentin Grimes into the fold, you're going to have to hope he can kind of play up and be a small forward, because that's really the position they kind of don't have a ton of guys. I don't really get what they're doing. They were buying the other day. They acquired, you know, a wing from Utah for you know, giving up an asset for him. It seems pretty clear that their goal this year is just not to be the worst team of all time. That's their goal. They're 7-43. They won 7 games of their 50, and they're trying as hard as they can to just not live in infamy. And there's not a Netflix documentary about this team 2028. That seems to be the goal, to survive the year.
Yeah, I hate those goals for them. I think that, you know what's crazy? I didn't expect them to be this bad, but they're historically bad.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the guy they acquired, Fontecchio, he's going to probably play a lot for them. They traded some vets, and the hope now is that, you know, guys like Jaden Ivey, Marcus Sasser, you know, Quentin Grimes, those guys are all going to play big minutes, and, you know, maybe they can run into a few wins and avoid, you know, a disaster here.
Yeah, I have no idea what they're doing. I don't think they've even acquired, like, premium draft assets even through all of this.
Nope, none.
I feel like there was at least some chatter about shipping off Bogdan Bogdanovic for a first rounder at some point.
They could have got a first rounder last year. This year they couldn't. They got Quentin Grimes, who's a nice young wing. But yeah, you know, they also got 2 second rounders in like 2027 and 2028. Like, what are they doing? And you know, Weaver comes from that Oklahoma City, you know, pipeline, right? And he's running the team, and it's been a disaster so far. It's been just simply a disaster. And I wonder if he can save his job.
Yeah, they can't all be Sam Presti, your god.
No, they cannot. No, they cannot. Let's talk about another rebuild here. We got our guy Eslin asking thoughts on the Trailblazers this year. And the Trailblazers were in a lot of conversations this week about Malcolm Brogdon. Then you see a report a couple of days ago that he's like, hey, don't trade me. I want to be here. I want to mentor these young guys. And right around that time, Shaden Sharp goes down probably for the year with an injury. So you have Scoot, you have Simons, and now you have Malcolm Brogdon. It's a, you know, 3 undersized guard. You're hoping this can work. Should they have traded Malcolm Brogdon today, Chris?
I think they should have. I mean, I know the Knicks were one of the interested parties, and I think you could have probably gotten a high first round pick. I mean, a low first round pick for him. I don't get it. Like, you can get a veteran point guard next season or in the off season if you really needed another mentor for these guys. But also, Billups is the point guard. Like, I feel like there might be a redundancy there. So the Blazers made the right choice in moving on from Dame. But I sort of expected at least for them to be a little bit, at least more committed to one of the young guys.
Yeah.
I would have thought maybe Simons, like what do you do with Simons? Is he the shooting guard of the future for them? Or,
I mean, they're both undersized.
They're repeating. They're essentially repeating history by, you know, having 2 small guards again. Like, did we not learn our lessons from the past? Like,
I mean, they're taking whatever they know can play. Like, those guys can play. They're legit NBA starting players. True. And so that's what they know how to develop. It's an interesting decision to not trade Brogdon. You look around the league and the six men type, the Clarksons, the Brogdons, even like a Tyus Jones, like those are the guys like I thought the Knicks should be interested in. Those, none of those guys got moved. And I wonder if just the market for a gunner six man type just wasn't there to get that, you know, 15th pick in the draft. Or maybe the Blazers, like a lot of teams, said, hey, this draft stinks. We're not interested in your 2024 first round pick. We want one for 2025, 26, something along those lines. And teams just weren't willing to give that up for Malcolm Brogdon. And I think if I were the Blazers, I probably would have just said deal to a 2024 pick, because this is a very quality player who's very rarely healthy. And they're finally getting him during a stretch where he's healthy. What's going to happen when that changes? Are you going to be able to get that late first round pick for him? I don't think so. And so I think they might have missed their window this summer to get the best for him. We'll see. Obviously, you know, when you get late into a season, right, that's when you have nothing to play for. That's when they start shutting down the vets. That might happen here with Brogdon. So I'm not really sure if they're going to get a ton more out of him this season. But it's a very interesting decision. So far, you know, we like the guards. I've been very disappointed in DeAndre Ayton this season. He's just been bad or mediocre. He got his max, and he seems to be chilling.
I mean, he's been doing okay for me on fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, he's fine, but I thought he would take a step up from his Phoenix days, kind of being one of the go-to guys, and it seems like he's kind of taking a step backwards. He's still a useful fantasy player, sure, but he's not that top 7-8 center that I thought he could be on a new team.
I mean, listen, I think it's just you think these teams can, like, I think the biggest problem with teams at the trade deadline, especially a team like the Blazers, like the Pistons, like the Bulls, it's like, you got to know who the hell you are. Like, you're not competing for anything. You're not going to compete with anything anytime soon. Like, what are you doing? What are you holding on to Brogdon for?
Right. Another team that held on to a guy, we're not sure if it was too long, we'll see, is DeJounte Murray with the Hawks. I was a little surprised that he was even on the trade block to start with. And then all of a sudden it seems like they were very determined to move him, that the Trae Young Murray fit just hasn't worked. They were ready to move on. We weren't really sure if they were looking for draft picks or young players to kind of go around Trae Young. They wind up not trading him, and now they're kind of just mediocre, and they're going to just try to, like the Bulls, go for the eighth seed. This one's a little different for me, Chris, because I don't think his trade value is really going to change much if they do this over the summer or even in February again next year. What do you think, though? Should a team have stepped up and offered a pretty decent return for DeJounte Murray?
My guess is that they wanted a king's ransom for DeJounte, and it just didn't meet the asking price. And I suppose it's harder to find another good player like DeJounte next year than trading for him for an asset that maybe might turn into a player. So I get why the Hawks held on to him, at least. I guess they think they can make a run for the play-in tournament, is my other guess. Do you know how many games back they are from the play-in, actually?
Not, I mean, it's the play-in, so not much. I think they're like 6 or 7 under 500, so they can make a run to that if they want, but, like, what are they going to do with that? Your best-case scenario is when?
So the Bulls, who we just finished criticizing, have a better record than the Hawks do.
Right. That's concerning. But, so you know, at the same time,
the Bulls are number 9 and the Hawks are 10. So,
like, the issue I saw with the Murray trade was the team, it seems like he kind of needs the ball in his hands. He needs to be the go-to point guard. The teams that were interested, like the Knicks, the Lakers, they all kind of have a lead guard already. Like, they already have, you know, DeJounte Murray's not taking the ball out of LeBron's hands. DeJounte Murray's not taking the ball out of Brunson's hands. So, like, it didn't seem like the right fit was there to get the most out of him. And so I wonder if that'll change this summer. Maybe a team like Brooklyn, who is, you know, way down there in the standings right now, maybe they want, you know, they get a fresh start. They strike out on Donovan Mitchell, you know, sweepstakes potentially.
Standings.
I mean, they're, you know, they're in the play-in race too. And so I think, you know, a DeJounte Murray to Brooklyn makes a lot of sense. I wonder what other teams that maybe aren't contenders right now but can see themselves becoming contenders next year makes sense. The perfect team also for me is the San Antonio Spurs.
I was just going to say,
you know, that's the one team that desperately needs a point guard. But I think there's no chance that Atlanta would trade him back to San Antonio and admit, hey, we just sent him back to San Antonio for 60 cents on the dollar of what we traded him for. They'll all get fired for it. They'll look terrible. And so I just, even if that's the perfect fit, I don't see that one happening.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, the Spurs made the most sense to me because it doesn't seem like that team knows how to function with a guy like Wemby. They can't even get him the ball. So, listen, I think the Hawks are right in holding on to DeJounte for now. But if you plan on, like, rebuilding or restructuring or like, just figuring out what you want to do with Trey in the future, like, I think once you figure out what you're doing with Murray is basically a signal, like, okay, we're going to build around Trey. So I don't know, like, what does even a perfect package for Murray even look like? Like,
I don't know. It's like, they kind of have everything. They just don't have, like, great players. They have solid players. Like, I don't think I'm going to find a better option than Jalen Johnson. You know, DeJounte Murray is a guy who can, you know, he can help on defense, but he really hasn't been a good defender since he got to Atlanta. DeAndre Hunter, that was the name I was looking for. He has, you know, been pretty disappointing, and they gave him big money. So I think that would probably be the upgrade they're looking for, like a wing who can kind of play with Jalen Johnson, who can defend, who can score. I don't really know how they find that guy. I think they kind of thought DeJounte Murray would do those things, defend and score. And so far it's just score with him. You saw even on his game winner a week or two ago, Trae Young just screaming for the ball. He's got his hands up and he's like basically begging the coach, call timeout because Murray's not going to give me the ball back. And so I think it might be time for that partnership to end this summer. But we'll see. Maybe they turn it around. Maybe they can kind of work together. They're two very good players. We've seen two very good point guards work together before. It just might not be these two.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on it.
All right, Chris, anything else you want to discuss before we wrap up our live show? Well,
you know, John had a really good question about the Clippers. Essentially, do we think that James Harden could sustain his level of play now into the playoffs? Because the biggest knock on his career is that he's a great regular season player. And the Clippers also have shown very promising regular seasons in the past. And now, like, as we get closer to the playoffs, do we think that Harden's going to sustain this? I mean, this is a veteran team. Like, I could see the argument for why this team is different for Harden because, you know, he has other guys at his level who could, you know, hold him in check or at least share the burden or responsibility. But these teams are also classic chokers. So yeah. Where do you fall with this?
You know, I might be a sucker here, but I believe James Harden can do it. I think in the last few years when the pressure has gotten to him, it's because Joel Embiid's banged up. They need more scoring from Harden or you know, Harden is on his own in Houston or Chris Paul is banged up and they need more from Harden in Houston. This time he's the third guy. If Paul George and Kawhi Leonard stay healthy, I think this team legit can go to the finals, just like we said with Minnesota. I think they have a better chance than Minnesota. I would probably put them second behind Denver right now. If James Harden is your number three guy, I think that's just the right amount of pressure where I would feel confident that he can make a few shots, he can make some great passes, and you can hide him on defense. And I think, you know, him as your third best player, you can win a championship absolutely like that.
Wow. So the Wolves are winning a championship. The Clippers are winning a championship. Yeah,
I think we have, you know, legit, you know, 7 or 8 teams that could be in the NBA Finals. And that's exactly what you want to hear in February. You know, it's not that's locked true. Up. We've had a lot of teams in the last few years where it felt a lock to get there. This year it feels like it's not wide open, but it's pretty close to wide open. So it's very exciting, and that's what makes this league great right now.
Also, can we talk about one more thing?
Sure, what do you got?
Before we wrap up the show, this is like another year where the Lakers lead the league in fake trades, only for them to not make a single move at the deadline. And I wonder how this will impact LeBron's decision in the offseason. And whether he stays or whether, like, you know, he goes elsewhere.
Yeah, I think it really just comes down to how they perform in the playoffs. This is a team that doesn't really show any competitive fight in the playoffs. LeBron's a free agent. His son may or may not be coming to the league in June. Is he going to stick around? I'm not so sure. It's not like they can give him so much more money than other teams. He's done what he needs to do in LA. He won his championship. He, at this point, should just go where he can win a ring, because no one's going to be say, well, it wasn't LeBron's team, so that ring doesn't count. He's still an elite player. And so I think they might have lost their chance with, you know, LeBron James as the lead guy for the Lakers going forward, because I don't really know what they could have done. They gave up all their picks. They made some bad moves, trading, you know, KCP and Kuzma and you know, some shooters and picks and Caruso, moving on from Caruso. All that was a mistake. And now they haven't really been able to get that one done. We'll finish up the questions here, and then we'll wrap up our show here. Let's talk about Poo Jeter. A former Kings guard. We actually had this question when we did our show last year. Poo Jeter right now is actually the assistant GM in a G League team, the Rip City Remix. He's 40 now. He's he's from Portland. You know, University of Portland was where he went to school. So it's nice to see him kind of staying in the NBA there. He was one of our favorites in college, right? He had one of the quickest players in the NBA. He was with the Kings. Now they have a better player at that position with De'Aaron Fox, but a very similar type of just super electric, fast point guards. Poo Jeter. I don't really know what else you want to know about Poo Jeter, but
question over. John had one more question. Do we think LeBron will recruit Poo Jeter to the Lakers in the offseason?
If LeBron stays, for assistant coaches, I wouldn't rule it out, but I'm not so sure LeBron is staying in LA next year. I really don't. If you're trying to see LeBron in a Laker uniform, you should probably go pretty quick. Because this might be it. And if he walks out of LA, I really believe that team might blow it up. They might say, okay, we have no picks. We have no way to put another star around Anthony Davis. They might say, let's trade Anthony Davis for a bunch of draft picks and a couple of young players and see what we can do from there. But I think that's going to be the most fascinating question now going forward. What, as always, what is LeBron thinking? What is LeBron going to do?
Final question and final. Did you make anything out of LeBron wearing a Knicks towel after the game?
Yeah, he does this every year. He does this whole thing where he's just trying to see the grass is greener somewhere else. 2 years ago, he went to the All-Star game and he talked about how Sam Presti is the greatest genius in the world. He's not going to Oklahoma. He hasn't been in Oklahoma City. I don't think he's going to be a Knick. I think, you know, it's the team I would be watching.
I hate Stan so much for that.
The team I'd be watching is the Philadelphia 76ers. You know, they are going to have cap space. They have two stars in Maxey and Embiid. You know, they have a guy in Embiid who can take over most nights, but LeBron can also do that at times. They're a contender, and I think they need him. And I think that is definitely one of those where it's an easy path for him to get a max deal and go there without having to gut the team to make the salary work. So would be the one I would be looking at.
All right, this will be the last question that we take from Mitch. If you could bet on any team to win the 2030 NBA Finals, who are you taking?
Taking Oklahoma City. They have all the draft picks. I don't see why you wouldn't. They look great. It's going to be SGA kind of passing the torch to the next great Oklahoma City Thunder player at that time. That would be my pick.
I think I'd go with the Spurs.
It's not a bad one, too. Victor Wembanyama can be healthy. He's going to be a threat for a long time.
Yeah.
All right, so that is going to do it for us. Thank you guys so much for the questions. Thank you for watching on YouTube. And then if you listen to this, you know, after we're done recording on Apple and Spotify, we'll be back next week to talk more NBA action, the All-Star game, the buyout market, plenty still ahead in the NBA regular season.
Bye, guys. Thanks for joining.